We are going to, in honor of, Purim coming up this week, I'd like to study the Megillah. We're not going to get through the entire Megillah, obviously, but we'll learn a little bit. Some of the psukim, some of the verses inside, some of the stories, some of the highlights. So if you flip, the Megillah starts on page, it's in your Chumash on page 1252, all the way in the back. It's a little bit of a small print, so you might have to squint a little bit. I'd like to try something a little different from our usual style. I'd like to read a number of verses. I want to start somewhere in the middle. We're going to start from the sixth chapter. We'll give you the background as to where in the story we are up to. I'm assuming a basic familiarity with the storyline at this point. We'll read a number of verses, throw out as many questions as we possibly can, just on the text, and then we'll go through a couple of different approaches and see how we can answer some of those up. All right, Megillah, fascinating story. It's a great Megillah. Purim's a great holiday, that's the truth. Bottom, end of the day, Purim is the best. Purim is just the best. So, read the Megillah twice, in the morning and at night. So I want to, let's talk a little, get more into the Purim spirit. So again, let's learn through the beginning of chapter Vav. Chapter 6, Perek Vav. The background, where we're up to in this part of the story, this is on page 1257, the sixth chapter begins. We're up to the part where Haman has, of course, already let out his decree to destroy the Jewish people. Mordechai has convinced Esther that she is the only one who can save the situation, and she invites the king and Haman to a mishta, to a little wine party. And at that party, when Achashverosh asks her what the purpose of this meeting is, what it is that she wants, she says, "Nothing right now, I would just like you to come back to a second party." So the first day, we are at that in-between stage, in between the first party and the second party. As you will recall in the story of the Megillah, Haman on his way home from that first party is Sameach V'Tov Lev. He is feeling happy, is feeling good about himself. Life is looking up. He's got a personal audience with the queen, with the king. No one else is invited other than him. He's feeling good until... No? What ruins his day? No, he sees Mordechai. He's on his way out of the palace. He's feeling special on top of the world, the number two man in the country. And then he sees Mordechai. And Mordechai, as you know, does not prostrate himself before Haman. And Haman utters that classic phrase, V'chol zeh, all of this, second in command, all the riches, all the money, all the honor, all the glory, einenu shoyveli, it's not worth anything to me, it is meaningless every moment that I see that Mordechai character not bowing down to me. He throws it all away for this one person who won't bow down. So his wife, Zeresh Ishto, and his other members of his household give him the piece of advice. You know what you need to do, Haman? You need to build yourself a tree, a large wooden pole, and what we'll do is we will hang Mordechai on it in the morning, and all your troubles will be finished. And Haman says, you know, that's a great idea. So he cannot even sleep that night, as we'll soon see. So that's where the sixth chapter of the Megillah picks up in that part of the story. In between the first party, the next party is the second day. Achashverosh doesn't yet know the meaning of this because Esther said to him, "I'm not telling. Why don't you just come back tomorrow? We'll finish up the discussion." That's at the part of the story. Come on in. Welcome. Where Achashverosh is, Haman has left the party and he's feeling mighty fine about himself until he sees Mordechai, but he's now ready to go because he now has this wonderful piece of advice that he's going to take care of Mordechai in the morning. He's going to go to Achashverosh and he's going to have him hung. And that's where our story picks up in Perek Vav, 6th chapter of the Megillah. That's the background, that's where we're up to. Let's read a couple of psukim, and what I want to do, again, changing our style from usual, let's just throw out all the questions that we can. I will throw out the first couple just to get you started as to the kinds of questions that I'm thinking about. What I want you to do is approach this as if you have not already heard this story 57 to 60 to 70 times throughout the course of your life, twice a year, all the time, we hear before, we after, approach the psukim and think about it from a fresh start. Ready? Here we go. Beginning. Balayla hahu, that night. Which night? This is the night following the first party, where Achashverosh is invited with Haman and with Esther. Balayla hahu nadido shnas amalach. That night, sleep eludes the king, unable to fall asleep. Vayoymer. So what's the king's response? Lohavi es sefer hazichrainos divrei hayomim. They should bring the record book, the chronicles of that which has taken place during his reign. And they should be read before him, before the king. Questions. So some questions we need to, not necessarily textual questions, but just questions we need to ask. For example, starting off, why couldn't the king sleep? What's the meaning of that? King can't sleep. So that night, king can't sleep. All right, we could just say, you know, he couldn't sleep. We could say that, right? Why do I not want to say that? Correct. So we could always say that, but let's not just leave it at that. So, okay, question number one. What is it about this night? What took place? What's our approach? What's keeping the king awake? Fine. What's the king's response? He can't sleep. What does he do?
Want somebody to read to him.
Somebody to read to him. From what?
But that's a strange thing.
Thank you. I know we're so used to this story. We are, of course, that's what happens, right? And guess what they find? We know they're going to find Mordechai, who says, okay, you're a king. You can't sleep. You're in the middle of these two parties. And what's your first response? Bring out the Book of Chronicles. That's odd. Why specifically is that what he wants to have read to him? What's the meaning behind a king unable to sleep, and that's his first response? Read to me about past events which have taken place under my reign. Okay, let's move on. They found written the incident in which Mordechai found out about the plot to take the king's life by the hands of Bigson and Seresh. That's back in the second chapter of the Megillah. They plotted to kill the king. They were speaking a language that they didn't think Mordechai understood. He did. He tells Esther, who tells the king, and that gets recorded. And that's what they find as they read through the chronicles. Shnei Sarisei HaMelech, Mishomrei Asaf, his chamberlains, Asher Bikshu L'Shulach HaMelech Achashverosh. By chance, that's what they happen to have. They're reading through, and look what they found. They found the incident of Mordechai, who saved the king's life. So, I think a lot of us are using, by chance, because Hashem had this whole plan, but that's what he wanted. We'll see there's more to it than just that. But interesting, that's what they should find. Now, Pasuk Gimel, third verse. Vayomer HaMelech, Mana so yikar gdula l'Mordechai alzeh. What glory, what honor and dignity have we done to Mordechai because he has saved my life thus? Anything struck you odd at that question? I don't know if this is such an odd thing, but I'll throw it out there. I think generally we think of kings as a little bit pompous, as a little bit self-centered, as a little bit thinking that they're really great. When his life is saved, what's the first question he asks? Boy, what did we do to Mordechai for that? I don't know that every king would necessarily, in the middle of the night, not able to sleep, finding out about how his life was saved, and his first thought on his mind is, I wonder how we took care of Mordechai. All right, maybe it's on a scale of 1 to 10. You think it's a 1 or a 10. I don't know how much of a question that is. It's interesting. That's the king's first response upon hearing that. How did we repay Mordechai? What do they say? Nope. Haven't done anything to him. Nothing at all. Vayomer HaMelech, Pasuk Dalet, Mi V'chotzer. So the king asks, who is in the court? Apparently somebody had been stirring in the king's court in the middle of the night. King can't sleep, has something read him. Somebody's there in the court, says the king. Who is there? V'hamon bolachatzer beis hamelech achitzono leimor lamelech l'sloises Mordechai aleiz asher. Who was there? It was Haman who had come. He also can't sleep. He is so excited about his plan to kill Mordechai. So he's now in the king's court, waiting to tell the king about his plan. King can't sleep. Wants to know what we've done to Mordechai, I haven't done anything. Haman is there. Right, obviously, we're familiar with the story. A lot going on at the same time. So the Vayomru pasuk Hey, verse 5, Vayomru narei Amelech, they say to him, Hinei Haman omeid bechatzer, behold, it is Haman who was standing there in the courtyard, and the king says, bring him in. Vayavo Haman, Haman comes. Now again, we're familiar with the next part of the story, but think about the scene. King can't sleep. They read to him, he finds out about Mordechai, and finds out they haven't done anything to him. Also in the middle of the night, Haman comes to pay him a visit. Now, we know Haman's got on his mind something. Haman walks in. So first question the king asks Haman, what should be the first thing the king asks Haman?
Why are you here?
Why are you here? That would be a fair question. Now, Haman, remember, was at this party, which was a lone, singular participant in the party with Esther, which is odd. That the queen would invite the king to a party, and it's not a chance to spend some time together because she invites the number two guy as well in. The king has not that on his mind in his now discussion with Haman later that evening where they both can't sleep in the middle of the night. What does he say to Haman in the middle of the night? He's still working on this Mordechai character. We just read about Mordechai. I didn't do anything for him. It is so pressing to the king that he can't believe we haven't done something for this guy Mordechai. The first thing he says to Haman, Mala asos b'ish asher ha-melech ha-feitz b'ikaro. What should we do? First question the king's got for Haman, what would be most appropriate to do for somebody who the king desires to honor? And of course Haman says, well, who would the king want to honor more than me? And then the story will pick up, but hopefully if we'll get through all that I want to get through, we'll continue from there. But let's just leave that. Some of the thoughts, some of the questions, some of the oddities in some of these verses in the first beginning here of chapter 6, Parak Vav, in our famous story, which we're very familiar with, this Esther, Megillas Esther. Okay, ready? Rashi, classic commentary, has an approach here. Two approaches. Really, we're going to focus on one as to what's going on. And we're going to take that thread throughout all of these questions and answer up everything that's going on. The Vilna Gaon, known as the Gra, the great Rebbe Eliyahu from Vilna, the 17th century giant, also has an approach, a very different approach, almost diametrically opposed approach, which he also is then going to weave that through all of these verses and explain what's going on. So I'd like to take you through how they approach it. They both started from the same point, differed in an initial interpretation, and then everything flows from there, working through all of these verses. I personally find fascinating to go through, and I hope you will enjoy this as well. Okay, the main question that everybody starts with is, why can't the king sleep? What's keeping the king awake? What is he bothered by? We all know when you can't sleep at night, the primary reason why you can't sleep, unless it's a constant thing that you have an issue where you're not sleeping well, if it's a one-time thing, balayla hahu, that night the king can't sleep, something's what? Something's on his mind. Something's eating at him. Something is bothering the king that's keeping him awake. What's eating at the king? So what would you say? What's bothering the king?
Well, Esther took her life in her hands to come. For what reason? Just to
Excellent.
Invite him to a party?
Okay. Number one, we'll see this beautiful approach. What's up with Esther? She literally risked her life. Right? What does Esther say to Mordechai when Mordechai says, you have to go in to see the king? Esther says, everybody knows. You walk into the king's chamber without being called, it's life and death. And we know that this king doesn't have any particular affinity for his wives, that they're off limits. Don't you remember, Mordechai, how I got this position in the first place? Remember Vashti? You remember what happened to her? She took her life in her hands. And what does she do? She invites Haman and doesn't tell the king what she wants. She invites him again. Excellent thoughts. What else might be bothering the king? Any thoughts? You're all too innocent and pure. Listen to Arashi. Listen to Arashi. It's too obvious. Says Rashi. I'll read it for you, since I wasn't able to provide you with Rashi's for. Why can't the king sleep? Comments Rashi. Nay, tell you. The first thing he says, it was a miracle. Because the events have to take place. His first comment, Rashi says, is the most straightforward approach. A miracle happened. King can't sleep. We need to read about Mordechai. We need the king to think about repaying Mordechai. We need Haman to come in. Lots of things are happening. It was a miracle. That's Rashi's first comment. Then he says, V'yesh Omrim. And there are those amongst the sages who have another approach. Says Rashi, Som es libo, the king was paying attention. He placed his heart al Shezimna Esther es Haman. The queen invited Haman to a private party with me. How come it wasn't just the two of us, a little special time? We haven't seen each other in 30 days. Remember, the king, the queen says, I haven't been called in the last 30 days. I can't just go in there on my own. How about some special time, just the two of us? No. Haman has to be there. Says the king, that's an eyebrow raiser. What's with Haman at this party? Shema nasna einehabo. Maybe the queen has eyes for Haman. Via Hargehu. And they are planning on killing me. King can't sleep. What's up with this party? Why am I here with Esther and Haman alone? And she doesn't tell me what she wants. King becomes suspicious. So all of you can't, you didn't come up with that idea. You're all sweet and pure and innocent. But the king has got some suspicions going on. The number two man, Haman, his wife Esther at a party with him. That's odd. So what's the king's response? What does he do when he can't sleep? What does he ask for? Book of Chronicles. Book of Chronicles. Why did he ask for the Book of Chronicles?
Maybe he is thinking that, you know, as a king, he should be all-knowing, and maybe he's missed some things along the way.
Oh, so Rashi is similar to that. Says Rashi, brilliant insight. So again, remember, even though Haman and Esther are not really planning, the reality is, that's not what they're planning. In the king's mind, what's he suspicious of? There's a plot between Haman and Esther to get rid of him. So he can't sleep. What does he call for? The Book of Chronicles. Says Rashi. Again, he offers two interpretations. First he says, simple approach, that was the way of the kings when you can't sleep. What do when you can't sleep? So either you count sheep, or you read this. Whatever you do, you read something that puts you to bed. Guess what? The King's Chronicles probably is not so exciting. So they read it to him until he'd fall asleep. That's Rashi's first interpretation. Simple approach, straight through. King can't sleep. What you do when you can't sleep is you open up the Book of Chronicles and it'll help put you to bed. Fine. And Rashi says to Rabbi Seinu, Amr, our sages have said, Mitoch shenosan libo al Haman v'Esther, since the king is suspicious of Haman and Esther that they're plotting. Omar I efshar shelo yodo odom shehu oyhavai atzosam via Galilee. Can't be that somebody wouldn't have found out about this. Can't be that there's no one out there who knows. Whenever people plot, there always are people, informants. Somebody knows what's going on. Says the king, how can it be that I don't have anyone out there in my palace who cares enough about me who would have heard about this? Impossible. Somebody finds out about plots to overthrow the king. Says the king, Chazar va'omer. So he said, you know what must be? This is a brilliant insight, Rashi says, the way that he addresses this. What's the king's conclusion why he hasn't found out from an informant that there's a plot against his life? Because why?
He didn't reward the previous person.
Says the king, Chazar va'omer, he said to himself, Shema osali odom tova. Somebody must have once done something for me. Velo gimaltiv, I didn't repay him. And therefore, ve'ein chayshishin odli, no one therefore cares about me anymore. Lefikach omar, therefore the king said, I can't sleep, I'm so nervous, Haman and Esther, what are they plotting? I don't know, something's doing. How come I didn't find out about this? How can it be? They're plotting to take the king's life. Someone knows. Someone knows. How come they didn't tell me? So the king concludes, brilliant insight. If I don't know, it's because they don't care about me anymore. Why wouldn't they care about me? Because someone did this in the past, and I didn't repay them. Therefore, Vayomer lo havia sefer hazuchronos. Bring out the Book of Chronicles. Says the next verse, and they found Vayimotze Kosuv, that which Mordechai saved the king. By chance? No, what were they looking for? According to Rashi, they were looking for incidents who has saved the king's life and wasn't repaid. Where has it happened that someone has stepped in done something for the king and wasn't repaid appropriately, that would explain why my informants amongst the palace aren't interested anymore. So they were looking for something specific. They weren't specifically looking for Mordechai, but they were looking for what's taking place. So we asked, so they found that the king's life was saved. And what did the next verse say in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3? What's the king's response when they find that story? What did we do to him? We asked when we read through. That's an interesting question. The king's first question upon reading his stories are, how did we repay him? Kings are most likely, most often concerned about themselves. The first question the king has in the middle of the night is, what did we do to Mordechai? Yeah, that's his first question. That's his concern. We are looking to find out, how come I don't know about this plot? The real reason he doesn't know about the plot, of course, is why? Why doesn't the king know about the plot?
Because there is no plot.
There is no plot, of course. But the king doesn't know that. He just hasn't found out about anything. So, it's all part of Esther inviting Haman to get the whole thing started. Because he's there, the king's thinking. But as far as the king's concerned, there's a plot on his life. He doesn't know about it. He thinks that's odd. Somebody must have done something for me. Open up the book and find out who that is. It's Mordechai. What's his first question? What'd we do to him? What have we done? Say the servants of the king, nothing. I haven't done a thing to him. All of a sudden, they hear stirring in the courtyard. Says the king, Mibuchatzer, who's out there? Who do his servants say is there? Haman. Going to Rashi's interpretation right now. Haman? What's the king thinking again? Haman's involved in a plot with Esther to take my life. Why don't I know about it? Because Mordechai has saved my life previously, years before, and I didn't do anything. Who shows up at my door? Haman. What's my first question I ask Haman? What would you do to repay somebody who the king really feels he needs to bestow great kindness upon? Why does he want to know? If I get it from Haman, and then I pay back Mordechai, I'll get Mordechai on my side, who will inform on Haman, and I'll have my life spared. I'll find out what's going on over here. So yeah, that's on the tip of his tongue, the first thing his thought, in the middle of the night. Haman's in his palace. It's not, what are you doing here? Right away, what would you do to repay Mordechai? Because that's really what I'm bothered by. I can't sleep because I'm worried about you and my wife trying to overthrow me. You marry her, everything is happy. What would you do to Mordechai? He doesn't use Mordechai by name. We'll see when I get through the Don Gons. We'll get back to exactly how the king asks this question is also part of the story here. But that's what's on his mind. What would you do to repay Mordechai, to repay somebody who the king wants to honor? Haman, of course, thinks it's him and gives his suggestion of parading him through the town. But that's Rashi's approach just in the text. How do we read through the continuation, why the king is thinking about what he's thinking, why he's asking the questions, why he's asking? That is, you know, it's only going to be a minute because they're walking out. That's Rashi's approach. That's Rashi's approach. So the reason why they all start from where? Why Rashi understood that the king couldn't sleep. What was keeping the king awake at night? What was keeping him awake is he can't figure out the nature of this party. He can't figure out what's Esther inviting Haman for. And his only conclusion is they have something going on. And then his only conclusion why he doesn't know about it is because he must not have repaid somebody along the way. Open up my book. Let's find out who that person is, and then let's find out how to repay him. All part of his plan to get back into the know of what's going on around his palace. That's Rashi's approach. Okay, so far so good? Yeah, except for the noise outside? It's all part of the distraction. So part of what? Sound effect?
Cutting those trees to King Street.
Okay. So that's the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon has an entirely different approach. Entirely different approach. Why can't they start from the same point? Why can't the king sleep? What's keeping the king? That night, the king couldn't sleep. So that's the Vilna Gaon. He takes the approach that Mrs. Bogart wanted to say. King couldn't figure out what's with Esther. Risking her life to have a meeting? Literally risking her life? Being willing to walk into my chamber, invite me to a party? I could have killed her on the spot and no one would have looked twice. and yet she was willing to do it and didn't say anything, she must have something massive on her mind. Massive. Literally something that's worth risking her life, that if she doesn't get what she wants to ask for, it's worth dying for. Says the king, what would the king queen want? What's the queen missing living in my palace? This is a queen, remember, says the Vilna Gaon. Does she have family? No. Does she have a nation? No. What is she missing that she's willing to die for? Can't figure it out. Says the Vilna Gaon, what's the king's only conclusion as he's tossing and turning? Mordechai. What relationship does she have to Mordechai? He raised her. That's all everybody knew. She came from the house of Mordechai. That's the one who brought her into the king's chambers when they were putting out the call for all the women to come to marry the king. Mordechai brought her. Mordechai's the one who raised her. Relationship? Nobody knows the relationship, but he's the one who raised her. But we know she has no other family. She has no other nation. She's a total loner, brought up as an orphan in the home of Mordechai, and she's ready to risk her life for something. What? King, says the Vilna Gaon, is tossing and turning. What in the world does she want for Mordechai? Who's the only conclusion I can reach that she'd be willing to risk her life, that she would go in cahoots with Haman with. According to the Vilna Gaon, the king was not suspicious that Mordechai, that Haman and Esther were planning together against him, but that they were on the same team for Mordechai. That's the irony according to the Vilna Gaon. He thought Haman was on Esther's side together, coming with some massive request for Mordechai. And it's eating at him. What in the world is she missing? What does she want that she can't sleep? And he knows that what's coming is going to be large. And he's not ready to give her something so large, because it's clearly not for her personally. She can't be missing anything. But whatever it is, it's huge, and I'm not so sure I want to give it. So what does he do? What do you do when you're preparing for a huge request? You do your research, and you try to figure out what the request is going to be, what the person is deserving, so I'm prepared for the negotiations as to what's coming. So says the Vilna Gaon, what's the king's response when he can't sleep? What does he ask for? The Book of Chronicles. Says the Vilna Gaon, not just Stam to read, he was looking for something specific. You know what he did according to the Vilna Gaon? He Googled Mordechai. That's what he did. He was looking, what has Mordechai done? Because clearly the queen thinks he's done something that she's worth risking her life to ask for something. What was it? What can it possibly have been that he did that she's willing to go so far? So they specifically, according to the Vilna Gaon, were looking to find where Mordechai is listed in the Book of Chronicles, and they found it that the king had been saved because Mordechai had reported on Bigthan and Seresh that they were planning on assassinating him. What's the king's first question? It's a very logical one again. What would we do for him? It's not out of the ordinary. It's not a pompous king doing something strange. He's preparing, he's doing his research for his meeting tomorrow where Esther's prepared to ask for who knows what. Well, maybe we did it already for him. What kind of business are you asking the world for Mordechai? Maybe we repaid him. Says the Vilna Gaon, therefore he asked, Mayakaru Gedula Nasela, what did we do? Answers his servants, nothing. Haman shows up. Haman walks in. Now, according to the Vilna Gaon, when Haman walks in, it's not like Rashi's approach. In Rashi's approach, king's suspicious of this guy. In the Vilna Gaon's approach, Haman isn't the problem. Haman is in cahoots with Esther to ask for Mordechai for something. He doesn't know what. So what does he ask Haman? Again, trying to preempt the request, which is going to be coming the following day. What would you do to repay somebody who the king desires to honor? And then the story continues from there. But in the Vilna Gaon's approach, that is how the story develops. It's a specific, targeted approach as to, I can't sleep because I know they're going to ask for something from Mordechai. I want to know, who's this Mordechai character that she's willing to risk her life? I look up him specifically. It turns out he has done something enormous. And it turns out, I haven't done anything for him. So you know what? I'd rather be in control. Instead of having Esther call the shots as to what I need to do to repay him, or whatever it is that she's going to ask, let me preempt it. I'll repay him in the way that I want to. I'll call the shots, how we'll honor him. and then I'll be able to diffuse whatever request she has, which is clearly a massive one. I'll diffuse it because I've already taken care of him. That is how the Vilna Gaon and Rashi approach the first couple psukim as to what is going on in these verses. Whew. Exhausting. Now, I want to share, before we go a little bit further, I want to share there is a chazal, which is worth noting, that says, the sages say, in Balayla Hahu, on the first pasuk, on that evening, Nodido Shnas Hamelach, the king's sleep eluded him. So there's a Gemara that says that the word Hamelach here, that the king was not able to sleep, was not a reference to King Achashverosh at all. It was Nodido Shinaso Shel Malcho Shel Olam. It was the sleep of the king of the whole world, meaning a reference to Hashem, was unable to sleep. Because in the scheme of things, again, the storyline is over here, the decree has already been sent, the Jewish people are going to be destroyed, Esther has already made her first approach for the party. That night, the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He, wasn't able to sleep in His scheming to put all of these events together, that the events should transpire as they were needed to transpire in order for things to take place. That's why there is a custom, not every Baal Koreh does, but there is, you know, there are various different ways of reading the Megillah. There are certain psukim which I read like this, and I read like that, and different things. So on that word Hamelach, there's a custom to read it the way that the Chazan says the word Hamelach on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when he begins Shacharis. The first time when the Chazan who daven Shacharis goes up to the Amud to daven, so he says, Hamelach, in reference to the king. So there's a tradition to read that word Hamelach, which in the simple text is a reference to King Achashverosh, but to read it as if it's a reference to Hashem. You say, Balayla, Nadadoshnas Hamelach. Hinting at, of course, that Chazal. Okay, any case. Okay, let me throw out another interesting tidbit that the Vilna Gaon points out. Pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, when they find that Mordechai had saved the king's life, and the king then asks what has been done, which two words does the king ask? What does he request has been done for Mordechai? He says, Ma na'asa, what has been done, yikar ugedula. Two things he wants to know that we've done for Mordechai. What's Yikar and what is Gedula? Yeah? Right? So translated in this sense, honor and dignity. So the Vilna Gaon understands them to be two separate things. Yikar is honor, kavod. Person gets kavod. When you give a person kavod, there's no end to the amount of kavod that I can give you. Right? That our threshold for the acceptance of kavod is unsatiable. We're always willing to take more honor and more accolades. Please, really, no, go on. Go on, really, please. Right, we're good at that because it's not a physical reward, meaning all physical things are limited. We can only handle so much physicality in anything. I love pizza. Great. How many pizzas can you eat? I can't eat more than three before I throw up. I'm just limited. I can't. No matter how much I like ice cream, there's a point, after however many gallons it may be, where you just simply put the spoon down and say, I can't. I just can't. I thought you love ice cream. I do, but it's making me sick. Right? All physical things are like that. Nothing in the world that's physical doesn't have that point where you just say, I just can't. I just can't deal with it anymore. I don't have any need for it. I'm not interested. I'm just done. Kavod isn't that way. Kavod is not physical. When a person gives me honor, they're giving me respect. There's no point where I say, well, I'm nauseous. No, it's great. It's a spiritual kind of reward. It's a very intangible kind of feeling. So that's limitless. There's a lot to talk. That's a whole topic unto itself, but not for today. So that's the first thing he says, Yikar, and what's Gedula? Literally some type of greatness. The Vilna Gaon says, that's Mamun, that's monetary compensation. How did we reward him monetarily? So says the king to his servants, how did we reward Mordechai both in honor? How have we put him up on a pedestal? How have we honored him by showing the world, our nation, how he has saved the king? And how have we reimbursed him? Which is just an interesting insight in the two ways that we like, you know, we like both of those things. We like to be rewarded monetarily. There should be a compensation for whatever that we did. And we also like to be rewarded with kavod, with an acknowledgement, which is not tangible, which is not monetary. And even in our workplaces, we like to be compensated financially. We like to be compensated by our managers and bosses with a certain level of recognition that they appreciate what it is that we're doing. And if either one of those are missing, so then something we're not happy. I need to be compensated fairly, and I need to be recognized. There are two separate things, both the Ikar and the Gdula. So the king asks, what have we done for Mordechai? So the servants say to him, nothing. Haman walks in. Note what the king asks Haman. This was not lost on the Vilna Gaon. Pasuk Vav, Fayavo Haman, verse 6. Haman comes in. What does the king ask him? Vayom Elo HaMelech, Mala Asos Bo'ish. What should we do for a person? Asher HaMelech Chafetz Bikaro. That a king desires to honor him. What did the king initially ask his servants? What do we reward Mordechai both with? And gedula, my yikar ugedula. What honor and monetary compensation have we given to Mordechai when he says to Haman, "How would you reward such a person who the king desires to honor?" He leaves out the money. He leaves out that he just says Hashem melachafetz bikaro, that which the king desires to honor. Now it is unclear to me why Achashverosh left that out. But what the Vilna Gaon points out is that omission, whether it was calculated by Achashverosh or was just a divine omission that he left it out, led Haman to the following conclusion. Had Achashverosh asked for both Yikar Ugedula, honor and wealth, who would have been the first person disqualified from the object of the king's request? Haman. Why? He's wealthy beyond. He's the number two guy in the country. Wealth he doesn't need. When he says to the king, you know, Saras, I'll give however much money you want. We'll destroy all the Jews. I'll add it to the treasury. Money's not an issue for Haman. Had the king said to Haman, I'm looking to honor somebody in kavod and in wealth, Haman would have said to himself, well, that ain't me. He wouldn't want to honor me with wealth. I mean, that's a non-issue. I'm actually giving him all my money in order to be able to get this decree passed. But when the king says, I'm looking to honor somebody with kavod, I'm looking to honor somebody to show them how important they are, Haman's first thought then becomes, well, you're looking to give honor, you're looking to give kavod. Who would the king desire to give honor to more than me, obviously? So it says the Vilna Gaon, that little omission in which the king only asks, who should we honor, and not who should we give kavod to, and not who should we give monetary compensation to, tips off Haman, for sure he's talking about me, and he therefore responds with what he does. And I want to show you another a beautiful little insight into his request. So says Haman as follows. verse 7, Pasuk Zayin. The person who the king desires to honor, Yoviu Levush Malchus, he should wear the garments of the king, Asher Lovash Bo Hamelach, that which the king himself dons. Vesus Asher Rochov Alov Hamelach, the horse upon which the king himself rides. Vasher Nitan Keser Malchus Birosho, and the crown that the king puts on his head as well. So three things: the clothing, the king's horse, and the third thing was the crown. And then verse 9, Haman suddenly changes his tune. V'nasoin ha'levush v'hasus, and then you shall place or give the clothing and the horse, al yad ish misarei ha'melech, unto one of the officers, and he will then dress the person whom the king desires to honor with the clothing and riding upon the king's horse. What's missing? Crown. What happened to the crown? You ever noticed that before? I just noticed that last night when I was preparing for something else. All my years of hearing the Megillah, countless times, I've read the Megillah countless times, never noticed that all of a sudden, from one to the next, Haman changes his tune. First he says to the king, I need the crown, I need the clothing, the horse and the crown, and then give the horse and the clothing to somebody and dress the person whom you want. What happened to the crown? Rashi says, Beth HaKesser lo hizker. Suddenly the crown was dropped in mid-sentence from Haman's plan. Shiro'o eino shel melech ro'o. Al sha'omar sheyitnu HaKesser v'ro sha'odah. He saw the king's face. He saw his eyes when he said you should place the crown on that person. There was a reaction. Rashi, it's the middle of the sentence. Well, what you should do is you should give the clothing and the horse and the crown and you should put it, the clothing and the horse on. He was taken aback. He saw in the king's face, oh, that's a bad idea, right? That's what we do, right? We adjust. We read people's faces as we speak to them. I see very clearly, oh, bad idea. Got it. Drop the crown. We'll just go with the bush and with the horse, and we'll just move on. That's fine. Good idea, your Royal Highness. Now again, where's Rashi coming from when he makes this comment? It all's beautiful together. According to Rashi's interpretation, why couldn't the king sleep? Rashi was worried that Haman and Esther are plotting against him. Not that the Vilna Gaon's approach that Haman and Esther are going to make a massive request for Mordechai. In Rashi's approach, he's suspicious. What was Haman doing at this party anyway? Must be, they're planning on killing me and taking over. How come I don't know? Because I didn't repay somebody else back. It turns out that person is Mordechai. I now want to pay back Mordechai. So I ask Haman, who's plotting against me, what would you do to repay such a person? And what does that person come up with? Well, I think you should take your clothing and your horse and your crown. And the king loses it. Rashi says, Haman sees in the king's eyes, bad idea. So Haman drops it in his next line and he says, and take the clothing and the horse and give it to the person whom you want to honor. Beautiful little insight. It's such a brilliant, just a missing crown from one verse to the next. It says Rashi. Now, the Vilna Gaon has to deal with the same fact that the crown was missing, but it's much more poignant in Rashi's approach that the whole fear, the whole suspicion of the king the whole time is that Haman and Esther are planning against him, and then he hears Haman come up with this plan of taking his crown and putting it on somebody. So Haman quickly drops it. Yes.
I want to say something to that. It's really odd with the crown, because if the king had perceived the crown, he could have also perceived it, according to Vilna Gaon, that all of a sudden, oh my gosh, the Jew's going to get the crown, and the fulfillment of the Jewish people going back to Israel, which he made the whole party based on his miscalculation, it could have taken it to another level and said...
Possibly. Oh. Possibly. I mean, I didn't see that he says something like that, but that's possible. That is possible. And therefore, just our final thought, says the king, Vayomer Melech LeHaman, in verse 10, Pasuk Yud, Maher, quickly, Kachas HaLevush V'Yasasus Kasher Dibar, take the clothing and the horse as you have said, and you yourself, Kach, V'Asa Kein LeMordechai HaYehudi HaYoshev V'Shar HaMelech. No better way to honor this person than for you yourself, the second in the command, the one who, according to the Vilna Gaon, again, we'll just take the two approaches. According to Rashi, that the king is suspicious of Haman, this is a way to really get back at Haman and say, you think you're plotting against me, I'm going to have you reward Mordechai, because Mordechai clearly isn't telling me about this, which he must know about it, because he's angry at me for not rewarding him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you be the one to take Mordechai around, and then he'll feel lovingly to me as well, and he'll inform me of that which is going on. And according to the Vilna Gaon as well, that Haman was part of the plot with Esther to ask for something on Mordechai's behalf, so you'll fulfill it already. Go do something for him, take him around the town, and say, Kachal Yeaseh Le'ish, this is how we repay somebody, Asher HaMelech Chofetz Bikaro. It's really just the first 10 psukim out of the sixth chapter. The whole Megillah is rich like this. The Vilna Gaon writes over and over and over again in his commentary that every word of the Megillah is there to fit into some part of the plan, to show you how things were arranged in the beginning to work out in the end, and everything was there with a scheme, with a plan, and as of course you know, Hashem's name is not directly mentioned anywhere. There are hints, as we mentioned a few minutes earlier as well, but just how everything is schemed together and to fit into a plan. But that's just, hopefully you'll have a little bit more of an insight as you go through the sixth chapter. You'll be sitting at the edge of your seat waiting for the sixth chapter as we read through the Megillah But just it's a beautiful, beautiful Megillah. It's a wonderful story and a great, great Yontif. So enjoy Purim and just some insights into the approaches of Rashi and the Gra into this part of the Megillah. Freilich in Purim to everyone.